The greatest tragedy of the Gaza War and the Hamas massacre that provoked it is naturally felt by the people of Israel and Palestine. But there's pain in Australia too, where divisions have destroyed decades of goodwill built up between Jews, Christians and Muslims. One of the most dedicated interfaith leaders is Barrister Robin Margot. He led the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies. He fought apartheid in South Africa. And he still believes the only solution in Israel and Palestine is reconciliation. Now Robin Margot finds himself an apostate in the community that he once led. He joined me in the studio.
Thank you, Andrew.
So we've had iftar dinners cancelled in New South Wales and Victoria. In Victoria, the Jewish Community Council has suspended all dealings with the Islamic Council. Jewish Australians are resigning from literary and theatre boards. There have been spikes in anti-Semitic and Islamophobic incidents. Robin, you've been a pioneer of interfaith relations. You won an award from the New South Wales government for this. Is this the worst breakdown in community relations you've seen?
I think it is, and I think the violence in Gaza is the worst that I've seen as well. The last Gaza war that I was directly involved in community relations over was the Operation Cast Lead, and that was very difficult too, but this is far worse. Mm. People on both sides are really traumatized. I think in times of war, our evolutionary group instincts make us take sides, but in these times when optimism about mutual benefit is at a very big low, it's even more important to try and keep links going. Mm. I've been for about half a decade a member of a group of Australian Palestinians and Jews, Partners for Peace. We try to understand each other's narratives and present realities, and to model something different from one-sided extremist conflict on both sides. But that's been very difficult for this small group too.
But that's intact though.
It's intact, but it's gone through some very difficult times. We respect and trust each other. There are both Muslim and Christian Palestinians in the group, men and women on both sides, but it's a very, very difficult. Members of my extended family were murdered at Kfar Azar on 7 October in front of their children, and one of their children at the age 3 was taken hostage into Gaza. Fortunately, thank God, now released. But Palestinians in our group know people who've lost 30 members of their family in Gaza. And they all have individual histories of dispossession and brutal treatment. And at a time like this, it has been very difficult. Yeah. We're still in touch with each other, and I hope that we will continue to not let our hearts harden and not lose our capacity to reach out and love.
It's impossible to capture or summarize accurately each side's pain, but it seems to be in a very rudimentary way that many Australian Jews are deeply hurt that people they'd been building relationships with for many years did not denounce sufficiently the sheer viciousness of the Hamas attack on October 7. Palestinians and their supporters argue, look, pro-Israel supporters are sanctioning the mass deaths of innocent men, women and children in Gaza under the guise of rooting out Hamas. I know that's a simplification, but are these positions irreconcilable in your view?
There are extremists on both sides. Some right-wing Israelis, their supporters in Australia, regard the horrors of October the 7th as just more evidence that Palestinians are filled with hatred, not only for Israelis, but for Jews generally. And there are messianic ethno-nationalists among them, including some members of Netanyahu's government, who oppose the creation of any Palestinian state, seek to have Israel's territory extend from the Jordan River to the sea. And on the other hand, there are some extremists on the Palestinian side, among not only Palestinians, but among some of their supporters in Australia. They deny that any real atrocities occurred on 7 October. They reject Zionism in any of its many forms. Some of them use From the River to the Sea and settler colonial tropes to deny any legitimacy whatever for the State of Israel or for Israeli Jews.
I can see how you haven't made yourself popular because you are seeking to recognise the Palestinian narrative at the same time as you are mourning, in your case, extended members of your family suffering. Does it surprise you that you haven't made yourself popular, Robin? I mean, because we're talking about someone who was at the very apex of Jewish community leadership in this country.
I'm not alone. There are many Australian Jews who think like me, and in fact, many who realised the position of the Palestinians and the way their voices were silenced ahead of me. I think that's one mistake that Palestinian and their supporters sometimes make, is to treat all forms of Zionism as represented by the current Netanyahu government. I'm still a Zionist. I call myself a conditional Zionist in the sense that despite the Nakba and the violence on both sides that attended the creation of the State of Israel, I'm very familiar with generations of history of oppression of Jews. I'm grateful that in an age of nationalism they had a national voice, but I wish the same for Palestinians. And there are many, many Jews, and I speak from knowing many, both in Israel and in Australia, who share that view, who want the same for the Palestinians as they do for the Jews. But some of the mainstream organisations have crushed dissent for a long time and claim to speak for the whole community.
Hmm. It raises this question with me, Robin. Are you now an apostate? Because you were the president of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies. You were the vice president of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry. These were very respected positions. For decades, you've been a highly respected lawyer and mediator. Have you become an apostate in parts of the Jewish community?
From parts of it, yes. From the people who ran those organisations towards the end of my term, yes. And that was largely because I attempted to do something which I think Jews have a duty to do, which was to try and educate our community about things that I had learned the hard way about treatment of Palestinians, about what was happening in the West Bank, particularly in East Jerusalem, about settler violence. This was 2010, 2011. And I did this internally to try and correct what I thought were very extreme biases in advocacy training at the time.
Mm.
But it was eventually crushed by militant elements, WhatsApp groups and things like that.
Is it true, Robin, that you are the only former president of the Jewish Board of Deputies not to be made a life member?
Yes, that hurt very much. The reason given by the one particular person who blocked it was that I'd served only 2 years, which is true because the normal term has been 4 years, but I don't believe that. I'd also spent 2 years before that running the litigation that eventually silenced the Holocaust denier Frederick Tobin. So it was a 4-year stint, and I'd done a decade of other interfaith and work with the board. So I think the main reason I was not being given honorary status was that they would entitle me to continue speaking on the executive.
Yeah, it's Andrew West here with the Religion and Ethics Report. We're speaking with Robin Margot, a former president of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies, now not quite so popular in certain quarters for his efforts at reconciliation. I want to talk a little bit about your background because it gives you a very sensitive perspective. You grew up in South Africa as a student. You were very active in the anti-apartheid movement. I know that you weren't literally forced out of South Africa or into exile at the sort of point of a gun or a bayonet, but I gather it was made pretty clear to you, Robin, in South Africa that you didn't have much of a future there. And if it was a future, it was one of constant harassment.
I became fearful. Friends of mine were braver and stayed, but I'd lost 4 people whom I knew closely and personally. Someone we know were murdered, one at least disappeared, and even the Truth and Reconciliation Commission never found out. I'd been beaten up by the security police. That was when Robert Kennedy came to South Africa. Some of my friends, the Afrikaans term is land verlate, which is a betrayer for leaving. I confess I couldn't stand the insecurity and the fear.
The other thing that gives you a special insight here is, can you explain to us part of the reason why South Africa took this case to the International Court of Justice against Israel? Because on the face of it, they say it's what they consider to be Israel's overreaction to October 7. But is there another grievance behind that?
Israel had close ties with the apartheid government. Israel had a realpolitik attitude to any government that was prepared to work with it or transact with it. But I would point out also that all five white defendants in the 12-defendant Rivonia trial were Jews. Mm. Mandela was one of those defendants as well.
Yeah.
And Jews have played a completely disproportionate role in the fight against apartheid and in the framing of the current constitution.
What was your reaction, Robin, to the news of October 7?
Well, I was terribly concerned about family members, and it sort of came out piecemeal. People talk about the sexual violence and whether it's all documented or provable, and they talk about questions raised about it, but I'd certainly...
Although the United Nations has confirmed that much of that sexual violence did occur.
Well, they've said it's plausible that it occurred. The fact is that to kill parents in front of their children, children in front of their parents, to take elderly people, toddlers, babies as hostage, to kill people who are dancing at a peace festival is atrocious. And we would condemn that if Palestinian resistance does it, and we would condemn it if the Jews did it. I mean, Jews have burnt villages in the West Bank, bombed the Ben Gurion Hotel in the fight for independence. No matter how just the cause, it never justifies that sort of treatment of civilians.
So by the same token, what did you then fear about Israel's retaliation?
In the early weeks, I simply couldn't second guess. I'm not an Israeli, but I couldn't second guess the military strategy. What concerned me greatly from very early on, however, was the apparent lack of any political program. Mm-hmm. I expected that there would be civilian casualties because Hamas is embedded in a very densely populated area, and Khaled Mashal has said since 7 October that...
This is one of the Hamas leaders.
Yes, he's on the member of the Politburo, and Hamas Politburo, and he said in an interview with an Arab journalist that you have to sacrifice lives for independence, and the Russians lost 30 million people to defeat the Germans. Mm-hmm. And other Hamas spokesmen said that October 7 will be repeated again and again.
Where do we go from now in Australia, a country that, despite all the naysayers, I would still argue, along with Canada, is probably the most successful post-war multicultural country in the world? Where do we go to now?
I think it's essential in the Israel-Palestinian conflict and in the relations between Jews, Muslims and Palestinian supporters in Australia that we stand up to extremism on both sides. I think it's quite possible to condemn the atrocities of October the 7th, and some Palestinians and their supporters have done that, and still to promote the Palestinian cause and to talk about the bad treatment that Palestinians have received for decades. Palestinians need to recognize that not all Jews are the same, mm-hmm. that there's a wide range of opinions, and that if there's to be any progress towards Palestinian self-determination, they need allies. I am really inspired, and it's kept me going through this very dark period, by something that Rashid Khalidi said.
Rashid Khalidi, he's a Columbia University professor, a Palestinian intellectual.
Yes, his family has a long history of Samud and resistance. And in one of his most recent books, 100 Years War on Palestine, which is a pure settler colonial analysis, something that I think is a misapplication. But I read the book because I respect him. And towards the end, I came across the statement by him, which gave me tremendous comfort. There are now two peoples in Palestine irrespective of how they came into being, and the conflict between them cannot be resolved as long as the national existence of each is denied by the other. And I find it particularly inspiring that a person with his history and with his view of the origins of the Israeli state and of the behaviour of Zionism, which I don't share in all respects at all, could say that. And I think it's true. So I think that the duty of Israelis and Palestinians, and certainly of their supporters in Australia, is to educate our respective communities about the realities that the other side lives under, and to work towards a long-term mutual benefit. I think it's extremely important to keep that hope and flame alive.
Well, there aren't too many people doing it at the moment, but you are. Rob and Margot, thank you so much for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you, Andrew.
And Robin is very much a former president of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies and vice president of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.